It's good to be here this morning. And I hope you're paying attention to the songs and the words that you sang, because we're going to talk. They did a great job of tailoring songs that go just towards what we're going to talk about today. So you all sang them. So hopefully you can all agree with what we're going to say today, and something that you can actually take and do something with, and not just sing those words, but actually live them. So I'm going to start out this morning by asking a question of, are you stressed out? Before you answer yes or no, let me take and put a little definition on the word stressed out there. Are there outside forces in your life that are changing or controlling the way that you live, that maybe you would say are disrupting who you are as a person? I know culturally we would say that maybe we're stressed out. The song that came out in 2015, that's actually titled Stressed Out. I think the majority of the front here knows what song I'm talking about. It talks about being stressed because as a musician, they don't know the right words, the right chords, the right things to say. They wish that they could be different, that they could be better, and that they're living because of the care of what other people think. And at one point in the bridge, it even says, wake up, you need to make money. Right? They wish that they could be in this time where they weren't stressed out. So are you stressed out? When you look at things in culture, if we look at politically, are you stressed out by where this nation is heading? Do you fear North Korea or Russia, our relationships with other countries, or maybe the state of the economy? The fact that maybe some of the new tariffs that have been imposed are going to hurt who we are as a nation, or just the state of where we are going, that my child, our children, are going to grow up in a nation that doesn't have the same political freedoms that we do to worship God. Does that stress you out? Does that change who you are and disrupt your way of living? Maybe it goes even so far as you look at relationally. We don't have to go so far out and look politically in the world, but we look at our own inner circle and maybe our family stresses us out. I think during the holidays, this might be one to put into the holiday bucket, that we become stressed out and we snap when we have to spend time with our family for extended periods of time because we maybe don't get along. Or maybe there's a spiritual stress there in which part of your family is rejecting God and you feel controlled by that. You feel stressed out by it. Or maybe you don't even have to go that far into the circle and you aren't stressed out by things outside, but you're stressed out by things that are inside your life, yourself. You have these inner thoughts and these talkings of, am I good enough? Am I doing everything that I'm supposed to be doing as a Christian? Maybe you look and you compare yourself to others and, I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. I don't know enough. I was actually thinking maybe even this apologetics class this quarter kind of has you stressed out. And we talked a lot about why we're talking about apologetics and why we're getting there. But are you stressed out by the fact that maybe I'm not going to know all of the answers? I'm not going to be able to answer every question that comes. Or maybe I've got some doubts. And those doubts stress me out. They disrupt who I am. And when I talk about stressed out today, I want you to really think about, this is not just I got a little anxiety, because if so, then I'm stressed out right now. Every time I get up here, I got a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of nervousness that comes in here. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the stress that really changes who you are. A lot of times that stress comes out with people snapping against each other. Look at those situations in your life. Or from the positive side, when things go so well that you lose your character as well. I'm talking about a loss or a change in character because of things that are going on around us. I don't think this is something that we have to say that we don't all have at some point in our lives. That we aren't stressed out at some point, and that we don't live in a culture that's stressed out. Actually, as I look and observe what's around me in the workplace, and just going out to the stores, I would actually put our culture as a stressed out, worn out, burnt out, always behind and always busy society, that we put a badge of honor on that. That if you're not stressed out, you're not doing enough. If you're not worn out, you're not productive and successful. This is not going to be a time management sermon. This is not going to be about placing some type of margin in your life. But looking and being cognizant of the fact of what is around us, that can affect our character. So as Christians, two questions. What are we doing? Should we be this way? As I said, I'm not going to tell you that you shouldn't be busy. You shouldn't have things going on in your life. But is the chaos and the turmoil around your life, is that changing the person that you are? And if it is, what does that say about our focus? I hope that you can see that stress in our life in this magnitude is not something that's good for us. Because we're being controlled by the outside forces. We're being controlled by things coming into our lives and living in a reactionary state. Because Christians, as we read and we see God's plan, it's a forward thinking, a constant way of living, not this always dealing and reacting to the situations in our life. So it begs the question, then what do we do? Because this is around us. There's no way that you're going to get rid of, let's say, your family, if that's your cause of stress, or your job, or if your stress is interpersonal, right, inside yourself, there's no way that you're getting rid of yourself, right? You're there. You're inside yourself. You talk to yourself. So what do we do about this? And I want to look at today is, as a Christian, not only do we have a way to deal with this, we actually have a way to prevent and a way to guard against that. That we have a way that we're not living as a reaction to everything in life, but we are guarded, maintained, and grounded in something. Now, this is going to be something that this is not a self-help sermon. This is not me getting up here and saying, Tyler's three mantras of how to deal with stress in your life, because I don't have the answer. I do not have that. And that's not, as Christians, how we should approach things. We should approach and believe the scriptures that say, His divine power has given us everything we need for life and godliness. God has equipped us with all of the tools that we need in our life to deal with the real situations of our life. And so when we find something like stress that takes and really takes a hold of our life, we go to God and we go to His Word to find those answers. So go ahead and turn to Philippians chapter 4. We're going to start out looking at verses 1 to 9. And this is where I think Dave really pegged it with the songs this morning. Is that the song 6 and 7. 7 is going to be our emphasis verse this morning. Was captured in that song. And how we are going to deal with peace. Now, this lesson originally started out with joy. The book of Philippians is a book about maintaining and cultivating joy in all circumstances of life. And in that, I ended up getting stressed out during the sermon about joy. And this is where we ended up. This is where we landed. So this is as much preaching to myself as it is hopefully something for y'all to grab onto. But Philippians chapter 4, I'm going to read verses 1 to 9 here. Therefore, my brothers, whom I love and I long for, my joy and crown, stand firm thus in the Lord, my beloved. I entreat Euodia and I entreat Syntyche to agree in the Lord. Yes, I also ask you, true companion, help these women, for you have labored side by side with me in the gospel together with Clement and the rest of my fellow workers, whose names are in the book of life. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. So, Philippians is a really easy book to read. If you're looking for an easy book to go through and just read the words, it's not really a struggle. There's not a lot of intellectual things to grab onto, not a lot of big words. But it has to be one of the hardest books, I think, to apply. When I look at this section and look at the words that are in here, Paul puts a lot of words like always, anything, everything. He's not talking about, well, just sometimes do this. You can use this every now and then, here and there. But he starts out in verse 4, rejoice in the Lord always. Do not be anxious about anything and in everything. What Paul's writing here is talking about dealing with everyday situations in our life and dealing with all of them. These are constants to be in our lives at all time and not just here and there. Which as we look at Paul's solution for stress, we're going to find it's a lot different. It takes our definition. It's going to change what that definition is. So I want to take verses 4 through 7 and put them in a single sentence. Because when I look at those verses, this is kind of a train of thought. It starts out in verse 5. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. Your reasonableness, or it might be gentle spirit. So let your spirit or your reason, let that be known to everyone. How? By not being anxious, but by your peace. So if you take and reduce that down, take those verses. And Paul says, let your gentle spirit not be known in your anxiety, but in the peace that you have, in the peace of who you are. And he gives an illustration actually later in the chapter with his contentment in all things. His practical example of this. So what is Paul's solution to anxiety is we need peace. This is kind of, the opposite of anxiety is peace. Thank you for telling me what I already knew. But we're going to look at what does that mean to in everything, in all circumstances, not be anxious, but to live at peace. And this is where I have the biggest struggle in this book. I also have the same struggle in Matthew chapter 6, where it talks about not being anxious and looking at the lilies of the fields and the birds and those things. And I think, well, look, the birds, they don't necessarily provide for the family the same way that I do. The birds, they don't have to worry about the other birds driving BMWs and you're driving the Geo Metro, right? You have these differences in life that you want to take and you want to apply them and say, yeah, but this doesn't mean all the time. This doesn't mean everything in my life. This only means certain things. But here, Paul says that peace can be had in every circumstance. Not only is it that peace is also a guard and defense for our heart. Peace is not just as something that we take and we pull out every now and then as a tool, but peace can be used as a guard or a defense in our life against the anxiety, against the troubles, the chaos, and the turmoil. That blew my mind when I read verse 7, that the peace of God can guard my heart. And at the time I read it, it blew my mind because I had no idea what it meant. So hopefully we can unpack this today and practically look at peace. So what does it mean to be at peace? The word peace itself is just calmness, tranquility of the soul. It's a stillness. There's lots of things that come into our mind. I think when you look at peace, you might think of a dove and the purity of the dove and the calmness of the dove. Or you might think of a lake and its pristine glassiness. Lots of images that come into our mind. But those are temporary types of peace. When you think about that lake, when you think about the stream, when you think about those circumstances, they're actually all subject to nature. And it just happened that maybe all the events there kind of lined up together and you've got a peaceful situation. But instead, I want to look at peace in what I would call reality, as opposed to this mental image of peace that we have of these serene situations, because this is where I found the biggest disconnect in peace was for me, was that situation, because that situation doesn't represent my life. My life is not represented by sitting next to this quiet stream, next to this glassy lake. That's not what my life, that might be vacation, but life itself, something I'm dealing with every day, all the time, doesn't fit that. So peace is, I'm going to show two images here. There's a backing story to this. There's a story of a man. He commissions for artists to draw him a picture or paint him a picture of peace. And with it, the majority of the images showed up like this. And they showed up with these serene pictures. You've got the glassy, like there's just enough clouds in the picture so that you've got a little bit of, you know, background, but not enough that you think there's going to be a thunderstorm. And there was no disturbances. But that was the problem with the pictures. There was no disturbances in these pictures. They were represented of a time of peace when all of the badness had been taken away. But instead, reality looked more like this. The picture that was actually commissioned was one in which there was a waterfall and a tree planted by the waterfall with a little branch hanging out. And in that branch, there was a bird's nest. And in that bird's nest was a bird with her eggs. And he said, that's true peace. The mother bird, through all the disturbances, finding peace in this crook of the tree. For me, it comes to this here. Where is peace in this picture? Where is peace in the troubled sea, in the storms, that ship going back and forth? Because I would say this is complete chaos and turmoil. But I think this is what we deal with in life. These are the things that are around us. This is why James says, don't be tossed around by the sea, because we are in the sea of life. There are all the situations, all the external things coming in. Now, you could say that you're going to fabricate peace by removing yourself from all of that. And we'll deal with that a little bit later, and the fact that this is just not going to work. And it's also a very cheap sell on the peace of God. But in this situation, where is the peace? Well, the first thing that I think about in this picture is the peace of the captain. Do you imagine if the captain didn't have peace, if he didn't have a stillness or a calmness of his soul, it would be chaos on that ship, and that ship would be lost. But if the captain has peace, if he has an inner stillness and a calmness, and he can be at peace, he can stand at the helm of that ship, and he can give direction. And he can respond to the situation appropriately, not react to it out of control. Think about the crewmates on here, the ship hands. When they find peace, they have peace actually in the captain. They're confident in the captain, and so they have a baseline to know that they have work to do in this storm, that they actually need to go out, and they need to secure the sails, and they need to watch with the ship. When we look at peace, I want to look at it differently than when things are just calm, and finding that, maybe your inner chi, right, that breathe in, breathe out, find it more than that, but find it as a place that when I am not crippled by the situations of our life, but being at peace is not a life without fears and problems, but the ability to handle them without disrupting who I am. When I am at peace, I am able to deal with life, my fears, my anxieties, my troubles, the turmoils coming in and out. I can handle all of that. And it doesn't disrupt who I am. It doesn't change who I am. The big thing here against peace, I think, is disruption. Disrupting or breaking who you are, changing your character. That's why I think when we see you're anxious and you snap, you go out of character, you go beyond who you are, that's when your peace is lost, because it's changed the character of who you are. You've responded in a way that's not who you are. It's an anchor for the soul. It's an anchor for who you are. It keeps you grounded, and it keeps you constant. So as we talk about peace, you're going to hear me use the words here, constant, a baseline, this filter that peace provides for our life. The great thing about this, too, is this is not just peace. This is the peace of God. If you pick this up in verse 7, that this is the peace of God that will guard your hearts and your mind. The easiest way for me to look at the difference between the peace of God is to look at the peace of man. And there was a study by the Personnel Journal that had a statistic of recorded history. And since the world began as it corresponds with recorded history, and the world has been at peace less than 8% of the time. So that's over 3,530 years. Only 286 of those years would have been considered peaceful. In that time, over 8,000 peace treaties were made and broken. Man's peace is temporary. It's fabricated. It's not going to last. It's not going to hold up. Eventually, there's a situation that breaks down the peace of man. And the second part of this is that peace surpasses all understanding. This is where you look at this, and Philippians does start to get a little hard when you look at some of these things and unpack them. God's peace surpasses our understanding. We see it surpasses our ability to actually make peace, to fabricate it, to make it as man to man. But it comes, its source is from God. And that goes beyond our reasoning. There's two ways that this takes me. One is, how is God at peace? With what God knows and who he is and all of those things. And he looks down and sees us. But yet, God is at peace. And he then takes that and gives that to us. And gives us peace. The other half of it is when we look at the peace that surpasses the understanding if you don't know who God is. If you're not a believer, I think this is where peace outwardly shines for us. If we are handling situations that crush others in the world, that talks to a peace that's greater than man. It talks to a peace that comes from God. It surpasses understanding to deal with things like death of a loved one, family fractures, to go through loss of job, your ability to provide. If God is not part of your life, this makes no sense. This surpasses standard understanding to say, how can you remain who you are in these circumstances? How do they not change who you are? And that's Paul's example then in Philippians chapter 4, verse 11, of where he says, I can be content in all circumstances. I've used this as a practical way of Paul showing the peace in his life through the highs, through the lows, or when things are just right. Paul has this constant, this steady. He calls it contentment here. This is possible because of his peace with God. This is where, too, we can't take the situations out of peace. John 14:27 talks about Jesus saying, the peace that I give to you, he's talking to the apostles here, not the peace as the world gives, But the peace that I give, let not your hearts be troubled or afraid. Jesus knew what was going to come up with the apostles. He knew the things that they were going to go through in their life. And he didn't say, I'm going to remove those situations from you and you'll be at peace. You can be at peace in those circumstances, in the trials, in the sufferings, in the death that you will face. You can find peace. Peace is not apathy. So this is where we start going and we look and we say, wait, okay, you said, if I don't snap, then I have peace. But wait, let's not remove our response to the situation. The common way that I have actually always thought about peace is when I'm not having any emotion to a circumstance. When I'm not having emotion. And I had at the point in my mind that if I reach this place where I have zero emotion, that I have reached peace. It just doesn't work. That's not what it is. Our emotions are not a liability to our peace. I actually think our emotions are a critical part of who we are. God gave us emotions. He gave us the ability to respond. He gave us anger. He gave us sadness. He gave us happiness, joy, excitement. These are all parts of who we are. We're not talking about having peace by suppressing those things in our life and saying, nope, we're going to shove those responses down. And I think the best way to actually look at this is looking at how Paul talks about emotions. I threw just a few of them up here on the slide. But we have grief in 1 Thessalonians 4:13. It says, do not grieve as those who have no hope. It's not saying don't grieve. It's saying don't grieve like those who have no hope. You can still grieve. Grieving is an emotional response we have, maybe to the death of a loved one. But don't do it like you have no hope. Don't lose focus. Don't lose control of who you are. In 2 Corinthians 11:28, he mentions his anxiety for the churches. And he had a response to the groups that were pulling away for their well-being and their safety. That was something that he worried about. This wasn't the anxiety that broke him. Philippians 3:8, the tears that Paul has. We see anguish in 2 Corinthians, again, chapter 2 and 4. Ephesians 4:26, anger. All the negative emotions are the ones that get the bad rap. Be angry and do not sin. Could have just said, don't be angry. But it says, be angry and do not sin. There is an emotional response to the things in our life. And I think this represents best for me. There's a song, it's not one that we have in our book, that says, break my heart for what breaks yours, in response to talking about Jesus. What breaks our heart? Is it the same thing that breaks God's heart? What gets us stirred up? Is it the same things that stirs up God? These are checks for our conscience. It's checks for who we are. Our emotions are very telling about who we are. I mean, even Philippians 4:4 then, rejoice in the Lord always. These are our responses to the situations in our life. We are not taking these things and suppressing and removing them. We're actually properly responding to situations when we're living at peace. The easiest way to look at this is actually to explore being guarded by peace. This is not just peace. This is why I don't think peace is just something that you grab out of your toolbox and you say, yep, I've got my peace, and I'm good to go. And I'm going to use it, and I'm going to come back. Peace can be used like that. Peace can be used for the situations in your life. But instead, we're looking at being guarded by peace. This is this long-term thing that goes in our life constantly. We're not looking for anxiety to apply our peace, but instead it's in here. So I like pictures. So I drew a little picture up here. What this looks like for Tyler. In the center, we have our heart. Because I didn't want a Christmas wreath up there. Our heart is going to be blue today. And our heart is inside this ring of peace. This peace is guarding. You think about like a legion standing around your heart. And then these things coming into your heart. Now, as they come in, before they can get to your heart, which produces our responses, right? Our heart or our mind is what produces the responses, our emotional responses, if we're truly thinking. That's what responds. Peace is now the filter. These things come in, and they have to go through the peace filter, or the filter of guards, the guard of peace around our heart. And so that says, when I look at grief, I don't grieve like someone who doesn't have any hope in their life. Because peace has told me that God has a resurrection. That for those who are faithful in the Lord, that I'm going to see them again. I'm still sad that they're gone. There's still grief in my life that they're not here. Just like Paul says, he struggled between being with the people and being with God, right? We can be sad when people leave us. Or when we hear someone blaspheming God's name, you can get angry. You can have a response to what that is, and you should have a response to what that is, because God says, my name is holy. You don't profane who I am. And so as his people, we take that seriously. That goes through that peace filter and hits your heart. But what it doesn't do when it comes back out, it doesn't change who that heart is and then explode. And you could see that changing into the rage monster, right? And going and losing control of who you are because something comes into your life. But instead, the peace both filters as things come in, and it filters as the responses go out. So that peace surrounds our heart and is constantly guarding our heart. So I want to ask you, what then is attacking your heart? This is where you need to think personally. What things are coming against my heart that this peace filter would help with? Is it the things we talked about at the beginning, the introduction, or the financial stress, the family, the culture, the inner struggles? And maybe you don't feel like you're doing well enough as a Christian. I mean, and you're living in a works-based religion as opposed to a religion that's based on the trust in God. What is attacking your heart? And as you look at this then, how would the peace of God affect my response to this? Would it change how I respond and also change the fact that this thing is disrupting my life? This is not just something lightly coming against your heart. This is an attack against your heart. The anxiety that he's talking about here is a destruction and a disruption of who you are at your core. So how do we get it? How do I obtain this peace? This is where Paul actually tells us in this section how we obtain peace in verses 6 through 9. I think this might be in every sermon that I've preached, and it will probably be in every sermon going forward. The first part is starting to know God. This peace is a peace of God, right? We talked about that's the difference between peace of man and peace of God. This is peace of God, which requires that you know who God is. Is there peace in the knowledge that you have of who God is? In verse 5, it says, let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. The Lord is near. Is that comforting? Is that scary? Or does that mean nothing to you? Does it mean nothing that God is near? He has not forgotten you. He hasn't left you. But God is near. He's at hand with us. When we get to know him, his attributes, and start that relationship with him, those are comforting, peaceful things. Those give us a baseline. They give us a filter for the things that come into our life. But you have to know who God is. This comes in multiple things. It comes in looking around us and seeing his creation, as we've seen in our apologetics class. We see his power, his might, his wisdom in the things that he's created. And we get it by looking at how he's revealed himself to us in his word. That's why we're encouraged to read our Bible. We're not encouraged to read our Bible just so we can become textbook scholars on it. We're encouraged to read it because it's what God has revealed to us about himself. God wants us to know things about him, so he gives us words and lets us know this is what it is about you. He doesn't leave us to guess. Okay, so I think God likes trees because there's a lot of trees on the earth. He doesn't leave it up to our minds to try to logically connect those things. He gives us his word to get to know God. So when we encourage you to read your Bibles, it's an encouragement to get to know who God is. And then once you get to know God, trust in God. And this is all packed out of taking your request to God. Verse 6, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything with prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your request be made known to God. To let God know what's going on in your life, you first need to trust him. I let my wife know everything that's going on in my life because I trust her. I trust who she is, the confidence that I have, and her ability, 9 times out of 10, to fix my problem because it's normally pretty petty. But I have confidence and I have a trust in my wife, and so I share with her. So we start then with what we know of God, and then we start to trust God. And we move, now I know who he is, his power, his plan, his sovereignty, all of these attributes, his love. And then I start putting my trust in him and living that way. And the first thing that Paul then unpacks as a product of trusting God is talking to God by having prayer. And he actually unfolds a little bit more than just, yep, take it to God, take your problem to God, and it's going to be okay. He gives us a little bit more. He starts out and he says, with prayer and supplication. By prayer and supplication. This is the thing that you need. Whatever that anxiety is, whatever the need you have, take it to God. Now, before we even look at any of that, God wants to know what you need. That statement right there alone brings comfort. That God wants to know. It's not very often that someone high up in authority cares about, you know, the little peasants underneath. But God does. Matthew 7:11 talks about what father gives his child a serpent when he asks for a fish, or gives him a stone when he asks for bread. If you who are evil know how to give good gifts, how much more will your Father in heaven give you what you need? God will give us the things that we need. This is that hinged on that trust. If you trust that God is going to give you what you need, you go and you ask him. You say, God, this is what I need. Now, this is where we've got to look at, where is our will aligned with? Is our will aligned with God's will? Or is it aligned with our own will? When I ask him for the dreaded patience, what am I going to expect to get? Do I expect this overwhelming sense of patience to magically come upon me? Or maybe I should expect some trials in my life in which I have the opportunity to grow in my patience. Because God is not giving us magically these things to create robots for him. We still have our free will. We still have who we are. And so with that, we find that he gives us the opportunities to grow, the opportunities to become what we're asking for. But we don't just ask him for the things that we need. Paul also slams onto the back of that, do it with thanksgiving. Your prayer needs to have what you want, what you need, the thing you're asking for, but it also needs to be done with thanksgiving. That, I think, is the God's mind and his wisdom. He's saying, don't just think about all the things that you need, but also think about all the things that you have. Think about all the things that I've given you that are good in your life. What can you thank God for? And the first one is the fact that we can go to him in prayer. We kind of go back to the first point, and I can thank God for the fact that he listens to me. And then I can thank him for his plan of salvation. I can thank him that even though I rejected him, he's going to come to me. I can thank him for my life. And one of the big ones that's hit me right now is I can thank him for having a purpose. That God created us with a purpose to be his children, to bring glory. I can take and give thanks to him for that. And when my prayers are packed with both my needs and my thanks, it gives me a different perspective. Because I'm not just thinking about myself. I'm not just thinking about what Tyler Brown needs right now. But I'm also cognizant of what God has given me. And that constantness, that peace comes back. That peace is there to guard my life. So we move on further down in the text. Verse 8 comes in. He says, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think on these things. So Paul takes it from prayer and then he says, think. Focus your mind. Put your mind on something that's good. Just, honorable, true, pure, worthy of praise. These are all things that when we think about them, we would consider these things peaceful things. The peace of God is shown in all of these things. These are good attributes that we live under. If we flip this over and look at it from the other side, it's not thinking about these things. Conflict, violence, hate, greed, pride, deceit, lies, drama, broken relationship. And this is where I find the most conviction comes in, is that through culture and through media, these are actually the things that I'm encouraged to look at. These are the things that I'm encouraged to think about and focus on. And even in the most good movies, there's always this conflict that has to happen. It's not a good movie unless there's some type of conflict in it. And I focus on that. And I look at that. Now, this escalates, and we see that we glorify broken relationships. That's what tabloids are. They're magazines of entertainment based on someone else's broken relationship. When I find myself at that, I am focusing and living in a world not of peace, but a world of chaos and turmoil. And so if I really, just from the start of it, look at what am I thinking about? What am I focusing on? Do I focus on the things that God would have me to be, the things that are peaceful, the things that are working as they should? Or do I glorify and focus on conflict? And this is where we look and see, where does it really matter what I look at, what I view, what I listen to? Does it represent what you're focusing on? Does it represent the state in which you find satisfaction? I find satisfaction in media that talks about broken things. That's where my life is. That's not going to lead to a life of peace. That's going to lead to a life that expects all of this to happen and actually finds satisfaction there. So first, look at where you focus and what comes in to start to keep building that peace. And then finally in verse 9, he says, if you practice these things. So it's more than just thinking. It goes beyond prayer, but it goes to doing. So actually start practicing these things. Look around and see what is just, what is true, what is pure, what is commendable, and go do those things. And this might be in the acts of charity that you have, in the giving of both your time and your resources. All this goes and pours into that. A, there's the beauty of not thinking about yourself in these things. And the anxiety does seem to go away when we focus on others. And it goes away even further when we focus on God. God's peace comes when we focus on Him and His things. And all those things that stress us out, they end up not becoming as important. That's the peace filter that God provides, is really putting this in perspective. Which is, this is the hardest part about this lesson. It's easy to say, I need to be at peace. Now God gives me peace. But is peace this thing that's attainable only to the elite few, when things are good, when I'm retired, when work is gone? Is that when I obtain peace? Or is it in everything? Always I can have peace. And the other half of this is when you look at this, and I'm guilty of saying this myself, of, well, I know this shouldn't affect me, but it does. And that's, we actually take and distance ourselves from peace and from joy and from all these things that God provides us when we do that. Now, I think we feel guilty that we've had an emotional response to something. That's not wrong to have an emotional response to something. But when we reject God's tools and His gifts, that's when we fall short. We fall short of saying, God has given me peace, and I can take that peace and actually use it. I know that this circumstance doesn't matter in the long run, but it matters right now, and so I'm going to look to God for my response and my reaction. And don't let it change who you are. Don't let it change to where I have a negative response and I sin in my action. But instead, respond through the filter of a perspective of God. And this leads to, we're most effective for the Lord when we're guarded by His peace and not disturbed by the chaos of the world. If we're constantly fighting the fires in our life and focused on all these little things that are happening all the time and trying to put them out and deal with the next problem, the next problem, the next problem, we aren't bringing glory to God. We've actually lost our purpose. You might know someone like this at work. That's the firefighter. That seems like all they're doing is putting out the fires that are coming up, and they're never making forward progress on a project. That's what happens when we live in the chaos and the turmoil and anxiety, is we're just fighting the fires in our life, and we're not actually making forward progress for God. We're not able to build up ourselves, our bodies, our temples for Him to show His glory. Instead, we're living to just hold on. So I encourage you to look to see, is there a way that the peace of God, through our thanksgiving, through our prayer, through being mindful of His things, how they can take and actually give us more effectiveness for the Lord? So I'm going to take an end here with another song. We start with a song, we're going to end with a song. It's not one that's in our book, but it's called I Will Rise. I'm going to read through the verses and then the chorus here, and think about the peace of God that guards our hearts as we read this lyric, these lyrics. There's a peace I've come to know, though my heart and flesh may fail. There's an anchor for my soul, I can say it is well. There's a day that's drawing near when this darkness breaks to light, and the shadows disappear, and my faith shall be my eyes. And I hear the voice of many angels sing, worthy is the Lamb. And I hear the cry of every longing heart, worthy is the Lamb. Jesus has overcome, and the grave is overwhelmed. The victory is won. He is risen from the dead, and I will rise when He calls my name. No more sorrow, no more pain. I will rise on eagle's wings before my God, fall on my knees and rise. I will rise. The heart fails, the flesh fails. The darkness is what we live in. We know that we live in darkness. But can you say, it's okay? It's well. I have an anchor for my soul, a constant that I can take and pull all of life's events through and respond. That I'm grounded in who God is. I can say, it is well. So our peace of God is dependent on actually being at peace with God. And so as we close today, this is the peace of God, which means that you need to be at peace with God. If you're not one of His believers, if you're not one of His children, you're not at peace with Him. It's at peace with God or not at peace with God. Because when we reject God, when we sin, we are not doing what he says, and we are for him or against him. And so our relationship with God starts with knowing who he is and trusting in him. Through that trust, we then do what he says. It's not because we do what he says that we're saved. It's because we believe that what he tells us to do will save us. And the baptism that we offer, being baptized for the remission of sins, is because God says that's what he wants to do. That's what we need to do, not as a removal of dirt from the flesh, but appeal to God for a clean conscience. God trusts, or we trust in God, that he will remove our sins. That salvation is tied into that. And we can't have salvation in anyone from God. And so I'm going to end with a question here. Do you want to find peace with God?